Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever-faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, who do we have out there tonight? Our normal band of malcontents? We have a good show for you tonight. We've got the girls talking The Walking Dead, and then some Van Helsing. Then I will join in for Emergence, and then Karen and I will finish up with AHS 1984, and then Mr. Robot. And look, Karen is here already.
Hello.
Good evening, AJ. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Got a lot to talk about this week, huh? Pretty decent week after months of terrible television. I'm pretty excited.
Yes.
About the podcast again these days.
Yeah, we got some good stuff to talk about finally.
Yeah, even the bad shows were decent. So I guess Jim will be with us in a sec, right?
I'm not watching any bad shows right now, so I'm in good form.
Wow, it's rare that someone can say that. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's rare that we can say that. yeah, we've got a decent slate tonight. I heard you running it down when I was dialing in.
So as soon as Jamie gets here, you guys can start on your... Oh, wait, you have The Walking Dead, so you are still watching bad television.
I am, yeah. Although it is greatly improved from the low of two seasons ago, yeah. I mean, it's not what it once was, but it's way, way better. It's really improved with the change of, the change of show with Angela Kang in charge. It still has some, it's showing its age, but it's, it's way, way better. And it's not really, it's not a hate watch right now. So we'll see when Jamie gets back here. We'll jump right into it. This week was all Alpha and Beta's backstory.
The Whisperers still around?
Oh, yeah. We're just in the Whisperer War now. The Whisperer War is going to happen this season, I guess. And so it was Alpha and Beta's backstory, which is a bit different, I think, from the comic book. As you'll hear. I'll get into it in a bit.
Considering there was no backstory for Beta in the comics, it's definitely different.
There she is.
Good evening, Jamie.
Yeah, hi, sorry. Hi.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
So I heard you guys say good, you?
Good, good.
So I heard you guys say Alpha and Beta, so I assume you're saying something about Walking Dead at this moment.
Yeah, we were just chit-chatting a little bit about, I was telling AJ that, we're still in the Whisperers, and that this week was Alpha and Beta's backstory, kind of. Part of it, not the entirety of a part of it. Yeah.
Well, I don't know because I haven't seen the other parts of whatever that is, so I don't know. I haven't read it. What did you think of this week's episode? I really liked it. I liked getting the backstory in that. I thought it was a pretty good episode.
I thought it was a pretty good episode. I don't know if I really liked it. I kind of liked it. I was just telling AJ that the show is so greatly improved from where we were like 2 years ago during the depths of the Negan horribleness. And it's not bad, that I think it's not what it once was. I mean, we'll never be back where we were like, the greatness of like the first couple seasons, but it's so much better. And I think it was pretty good. It's so much better that like, I don't want to be like I want to judge it not against itself. Like
right.
I just want to be sure that I'm not like, because it was once horrible, doesn't make this awesome this week. But it was pretty good. I personally, I don't know that Alpha and Beta's backstory was a story I felt I really needed to see. I know that many, many viewers are very curious, particularly about Beta. And I think a lot of people wanted this one and wanted to see this, which is fine. And it was pretty good. I don't have to know Beta's backstory to be able to like sort of move on and watch this. I'm not the hugest.
Right, but you also read the comics and know more than people like me do. So.
Yeah, although, as AJ pointed out before you joined, there's really no Beta backstory in the comics.
Oh,
except in the comics, I think...
so much Beta and Alpha that I wanted to know more about her.
Yeah, yeah. Beta, I think all we know in the comics is that he's a former... Is he an NBA player? I think AJ might chime in and be able to tell me that. I think that all we learn about him is that, you know, he's super tall. And I think in the comic book, he used to play in the NBA, which I think is all we know about him.
Yeah,
Which is not the case that we learned last night. Well, we didn't really learn. I guess it's still possible. But anyway, yeah, I didn't really have to have it. I find Beta is so stoic and so without feeling as to be, to many people, that's mysterious and interesting. I think he's borderline boring a little bit sometimes. But Beta's, Alpha's just freaking out of her mind. She's just out of her gourd, don't you think?
Yeah, but that's the point. but yeah, but I found her backstory more interesting than his. I mean,
and it was entirely them. There was nothing else in it, right? This is entirely an episode about. This is entirely set. Like, what do you think?
Well, not entirely, because there's the second part of the story going on during it too, with that's in the present. Which I
there
think
is.
Was just as interesting.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But it's entirely, there's
a,
nobody at Alexandria.
Since I watched it, huh?
That's
no,
right,
no
but
Alexandria.
Nobody from Alexandria. Yeah, yeah, it's
right.
Entirely them.
But I like that there's a fallout from what she did with the baby and that she attacked her. I mean, obviously her sister was really cool that she killed her own, the one who did it, her own sister, to protect Alpha. But yeah, I don't know. I just like that there was kind of some fallout for that because it made it seem more realistic for somebody who, you know, lost their baby that eventually they kind of snapped. And it also showed there was some dissent in her ranks. It's just they're not willing to speak up. It's kind of like Negan's people, you know. Unless people say something, everybody listens. So I thought that was interesting. And also the fact that he kind of sees her slipping because, like, she doesn't kill her at the beginning. You know, she lets her get away with it and whatever. Well, she didn't, I shouldn't say in the beginning she didn't kill her, all her sister did. But, like, that she let her go. And the whole thing with her weird little, I don't know what you want to call it, altar to her daughter. Like, I think it was interesting seeing her kind of nuts in the sense of, like, crying and, I mean, she's still crazy and bad, but I mean, like, it was nice to see her have some emotion and not just be like, I got to kill everybody if they disagree with me, you know? So I thought it gave her character a little bit more depth in that sense. And then the other thing is, at least you do find out in this episode, too, that the, well, I guess we already knew because we knew it was the satellite, but I was going to say that they had nothing to do with it. But you get to see that they saw it, too. So they, like, you know, kind of knew about it at the same time. But I don't know, and I think really the one thing I would ask you though with Beta, was that supposed to be his kid, or did they just really not? I don't know if you weren't supposed to know who it was, or you supposed to assume. I think if I remember, it looked like he was younger. It was hard to tell.
I thought it was maybe his friend. At first, I thought it was his brother, but then when I realized that at first I thought the building he was staying in was a psychiatric hospital. But then I thought it was more like a rehab kind of a place. So I think that was his friend because I think he was in rehab when the apocalypse happened and that's why he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And so your brother, I thought it might be his brother at one point, but like your brother wouldn't be in rehab with you. But it was someone who was really important to him, obviously, right?
Yeah, but I guess the friend does make more sense in that case. It's not important. I just was curious.
Yeah.
But
it's somebody who was important.
The Facebook's a lot smaller. That's why I kind of, it's one of the reasons I remember now, one of the reasons I assumed was that face, like, doesn't cover his whole face. Like, it's like a partial mask.
Well, I mean,
I don't
it's
know,
possible.
But, yeah.
But he's such a giant man that a normal face might not cover his.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. The thing is this shows how insane they both are, like, them enjoying killing them and enjoying cutting up the bodies and all this.
You're away from the mic. You're very quiet, Jamie.
Oops, sorry. I had my hand on the phone. I didn't realize that. I said I liked... That's my fault. I said it shows how insane they both are. They enjoy killing together and how they enjoy, you know, cutting up the body and everything. But I think it was interesting to see kind of this was the birth of let's wear their skins even though it was a totally crazy reason. And the fact that you think, well, he don't want to let go of his friend, so let's just take his face with us. It's kind of like, I don't know who comes up with that, but you know.
And his T-shirt. He's wearing that T-shirt.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, I guess he just didn't want her seeing his face, kind of like he's not that person now. But I kind of would have been interesting if they showed it, because I thought at first maybe he was supposed to be like scarred or something. But I don't think he is. I don't think that's the point. But I don't know.
Well,
it
was
really crazy stuff. But I enjoyed seeing and learning more about them, I guess. But since I haven't read the comics, I don't know as much either. Sorry, go ahead.
So he didn't want her to see his face clearly. And I do agree with you, he was acting as though maybe he's scarred or disfigured. There's a lot of speculation on the internet that he's a famous musician. And it's based on, in Fear the Walking Dead, when in the last two episodes, when Daniel was trying to save those records and he and Grace were set upon by zombies and he had to like drop all the records and they all got broken in the road. Remember that? So there's a close-up of one of the records, and there's the face of, like, a country musician that looks like it could be Ryan Hurst. I don't think it really is Ryan Hurst, but people think that maybe that guy on that record is whoever Beta was in his past life. And they're basing that in part because it looks similar, but also because – in the comic book, I think Beta's famous, and I think he was a basketball player. So could they have tweaked it that he's a famous musician? And do we care? No. I think you're right that his backstory is irrelevant, really, what he was. It's more like a little shout-out Easter egg to the fans, maybe, if he turns out to be somebody famous. I don't know. But anyway, that's what's been scuttlebutt on the internet for a few months now.
That's interesting, though. I like the idea that he could be hiding his face because he's famous for no other reason.
Yeah.
I never even thought about that, but I didn't notice, you know, or care about the Easter egg either. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like
it
I said, I was
matter.
More interested in Alpha, and I liked seeing her kind of break. I don't know. But Samantha Morton, I think, is really good in this episode. Ryan Hurst. He didn't do as much.
So their whole way they get together is very strange and weird, and the way they're drawn together, and it's almost sort of like
crazy news
sexual,
crazy.
Right? Well, there's sort of this like undercurrent of like almost sexual tension, but
not
really. And I read this some brief interview with Ryan Hurst where he said that he and Sarah Morton worked really hard to make it seem carnal but not sexual, and that like they worked really hard to have this level of intimacy between them that is like they're so, so close, almost like lovers, but they're not, right?
Yeah,
it is kind of weird.
It was kind of twisted a little bit. It just was very
it is kind of twisted.
But...
And I mean, she's immediately so curious about him and so drawn to him.
And
I think, you know,
she's insane like her. That's what I said.
Well, I mean, but she also was looking for the way she's so, I mean, so much of this was, as you said, about Lydia and where she's built this, you know, she's making a new skin for Lydia, obviously kind of hoping that maybe Lydia will come back someday and she saved Lydia's bunny and, you know, we've seen all this. And yet you look in the, we've seen the way she treats Lydia and the way in the past the way she treated Lydia. And you know, she says Lydia was dead to me the moment she was born because she's not like me. And she... We see these kind of loving
a lot
moments.
I wonder if that's true, though. Like, I kind of feel like, maybe I'm wrong with this, but, I mean, yeah, she's been mean to her growing up in that, and she wanted her to become like her, but I wonder if it was originally to survive, and it's like, do anything to survive, and I also kind of wonder if, like, her saying, oh, she was dead to me and all this, I don't know, I kind of wonder if a lot of that is put on because she can't admit that she did care about her. Not necessarily even won't admit it to him, but I mean like won't admit it to herself because I feel like she thinks of it as a weakness. Yeah.
But this is not
not
the first flashback where we see her threaten to leave Lydia behind or to allow Lydia to be killed. I mean, even in the early flashbacks, Lydia's even younger in the flashbacks we saw like last year. And she threatened multiple times to leave her behind. You know, you almost got us killed. And it's all reflected in the girl who becomes Gamma. We see her with her sister, the woman who's, you know, PTSD
with
her baby.
Yeah.
And she says, I should have left you when I had the chance. I should have left you behind when I had the chance. And the sister later says, did you mean that? And she just says, go to sleep. Like, because she kind of did mean it, right? Like, she's Alpha's mini-me, but, I mean, I guess Alpha is using her as, like, a surrogate Lydia, right? Like, she's replacing Lydia with this woman.
Yeah, and I mean, Beta is not happy about Gamma. I keep wanting to say Omega. He's obviously not happy that she's chosen this. I don't know if he feels threatened or what, but I don't know. I could see him trying to kill her later or trying to come up with an excuse to kill her or something, which is where you kind of say, like, there is something between them that's, I don't want to, like you said, it's not exactly sexual, but it's like a possessive, I don't know.
I think he feels threatened in two ways. I mean, I think he feels threatened because it's a threat to the pack, to the group. Like, he's, I think there's no feeling left in him, or no kindness or compassion, or, like, he's very, I mean, he definitely has become an animal. And I think, secondly, the way they position the Whisperers to be like,
weak too.
The way they position them to be like a wolf pack, and, like, the Beta wolf would be threatened by another wolf, like, making a power play within the pack, right? So there's that also. I mean, I could see him, okay, not so I know where the storyline is going in the comic book, but within the show, I could really see him turning on Alpha because he feels like she's not a good leader anymore and he needs to take control to save the pack. I could see that storyline happening except this story is not about them. It's about the Alexandria people. And so, you know, if anybody is going to ever kill either of them, it's going to be one of our heroes.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
So,
I hope so anyway. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, cause I didn't know, I looked, somebody else had it up in their review. So I guess we're allowed to say this cause I didn't actually, let me see while you're talking, I'm going to see if I can find the exact thing, but, if it says specifically what it says. Okay, yeah, it doesn't say you can't say it. I was just making sure. Next week is Negan is in it. I mean, like, more in it. He kind of has more to do. I don't want to say too much, but I'm trying to see what they said. That's why if I see what else somebody else says, then I don't
worry. What are you reading? You're reading somebody else's recap of the promo?
No, of their review for next week. I have to put mine up. And I want to make sure before I, you know, say anything. If somebody else has revealed spoilers, then I feel like, okay, well, then I guess we're allowed to reveal it. But no, but
well, we don't want to reveal any.
No, I know, but I mean, semi, not really spoilers. But, you know, anything about the episode. But Negan has a lot of scenes with Aaron in it. I can say that because they've said that. So, yeah. I don't know. I think that their interaction in the next episode is really interesting. And like I said, I don't mind him this season like I did before. I think they've definitely improved his character. But that's all I'll say about it. People can know more when I put my review up because I gotta get it up there. But I did write the review.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
okay. Great.
Alrighty. So, what are we going to do next?
Let's bang out Van Helsing.
Okay.
Which was more of an Axel episode this week. And it is so good. I mean, it's good to see Axel back. I'm not sure I love his character, what they've done with his character right now. But it was, you know, nice to at least get back to him because we haven't seen him since the end of last season. And so that was cool. And it was a pretty decent episode. And it was so great to see Richard Harmon, who AJ and I both love from The 100, as the guest star and as a bad guy, which Richard Harmon does really well. He played the warden. The warden. And then I really enjoyed Nicole Munoz in this episode, who we haven't seen since Defiance. And I find her I like her a lot more than I liked her in Defiance, actually. How did you enjoy this?
A lot more to do in this. I would agree with that. And people can also read that interview with Nicole if they go to Sci-Fi Vision. I only put up part one, though. Part two is going to be after the finale because we talked about the whole season. So people can see that stuff. And also, before I forget, my interview with Trisha Helfer is going to go up Friday, too. So can read about her playing Dracula. But anyway, so, yeah, I like this episode because we get more of Axel back and kind of get to see where he's at and what he does. But I also really liked getting to see, I know, I can never remember names
Flesh
anymore. I don't know.
Flesh and
Jolene. Yeah, I really liked getting to see them again because I was kind of waiting to figure out their story. Let me ask you a question, though, because there's one thing I can't remember in mythology. I can't remember if I asked you this or not. I can't remember who I asked, but I'll ask you anyway. Do you understand or remember, like, exactly who's immortal and who's not? Because the only, from what I understand, anybody who was bitten by Vanessa, I think, heals, right? It's just the ones that were bitten by that guy that was the experiment are the ones that are, like, the Daywalkers, right? I mean, I don't know that it matters because I watched the whole season not understanding that part. They're not remembering that part. Flesh, I know, because he shot himself in the head and didn't die. So I mean,
but Flesh is the only person who was bitten by both. Flesh was bitten by Vanessa, and then he was also bitten by Daywalkers.
But wasn't
later.
What's McCall bitten by Daywalker too? Julius? I'm pretty sure he was.
Was he? Is that why he's...
I thought so. I didn't think the doc was, but I thought he was. I just was confused because it seems like I know that some of them are, I don't want to say immortal because obviously they're not completely immortal, but they can't be killed, the Daywalkers. And I knew there were certain ones, but I got confused with if it was just, because I was thinking at first they were like that because Vanessa bit them, but I think the only difference is Vanessa bites them, they can't turn vampire again, and maybe they heal. I can't remember if Doc heals or
they
not.
They heal.
That's
I think
the thing,
they heal. You know? Oh, yeah.
But,
I can't remember Doc heals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously,
anyway,
the other one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was just asking. Sorry. But anyway, it was nice to see them again and kind of that whole story and him trying to get his, obviously, wants to get his wife back and everything. And then on the other side, you have, like you said, you have Jack's story. So, yeah, I mean, she was bit and she not only turned one of the vampires human, but she came back to life. So, after she was burned alive. So obviously that's going to become a big part in it. I've already seen the end, but I do really like, and this was kind of where I think it started to get more and more interesting with her and Violet, the different things we found out because it kind of brings like a deeper mythology and I don't know, becomes.
It does. I mean, I'm a little not totally down with possibly all these baby Van Helsings showing up. Like Violet, you know, Julia said last episode, I think I found a Van Helsing. I mean, I think it's more likely Violet was a lab experiment, much like the two Van Helsing girls were. And now it looks like Jack may be, is she a Van Helsing or has she, but she's got some, or was she tested on with the blood, but she's got similar powers to Vanessa and explains why she felt so drawn to Vanessa when in the first episode where they met, right? The thing is, if you remember in season one, Vanessa was unconscious for 3 years after she was bitten, when Axel watched over her, and that's why he always called her Sleeping Beauty. And when the season opens, when the series opens, Vanessa's been unconscious.
Right.
I believe it's 3 years that she's unconscious, right?
Unless it's because things have progressed. I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good thing.
And Vanessa's healing abilities and other kinds of powers have progressed as she's been bitten and taught and learned and fought and whatever. And these girls seem to have like immediate, you know, I mean, Violet gets bitten and she's, you know, only down for
I haven't thought about that at all.
A matter of minutes. Right. And Jack also. So I'm not really sure.
Well, I guess
there's
they could
jump
a couple years in the future though. But yeah, all we know so far is that they can turn vampire. It looks like they can turn vampires human and that, Violet didn't die or anything. She healed. I can't
healed.
Remember.
She just healed, yeah. Healed.
Well, Jack obviously was the one that died and came back. So, you know, whatever those things mean, I will not, you know, say. But yeah, I don't know. I just think that the mythology is kind of like growing, I guess. And I don't know. I just think it's interesting where it goes. I was trying to remember what happened at the end with the where the Flesh and Jolene story left off, though. That I was trying to remember, because I don't want to say anything, and I can't remember.
Oh, because the bus crashed. There was a bus crash. The prison bus crashed, and everyone was killed, except they escaped. And that's where we last saw
episode.
Them at the end.
Right, I mean, at the end of this episode with Max and everything.
The warden shoots Flesh, and he comes back to life. And so the warden takes Jolene to his office to question her and takes Flesh away to see how much he can take. And that's the last time. So when he gets taken away, Axel arrives and Jolene sees Axel in the courtyard. So she instigates a fight with the guard to draw attention so that Axel will see her. And he goes away. But of course he goes away. I mean, it was totally, I thought it was a really lame ending and so obvious, like, they want to make you think Axel doesn't care and goes away. You know he's going to come back.
We can't just jump
and save
in.
Her. You
yeah,
can't just
yeah.
jump
I
in the middle
go
of...
I didn't want to go too far with what I said. I didn't remember
you can't just
ended.
All
yeah.
of a sudden react and save her. He'll be shot and killed immediately. I mean, he has to play it cool and formulate a plan. Duh, right? I felt it was a little... I felt it could have been a little less
I guess I would have guessed that at that point, though.
TV
he has
trope.
Changed, I think, since what happened to Charlotte, though, too.
You mean Scarlet?
Scarlet. What did I say? Charlotte. Scarlet.
Charlotte.
Yeah, I meant Scarlet. Yeah.
But he hasn't. This also is deflection. Like,
no, I know. I'm
supposed
just saying.
To be,
he's
like,
still, I think, the good guy.
Of course he. I mean, he has nothing against Jolene and Flesh, right? Like, why would he not act to save them? He has nothing against them. And maybe they might know where Vanessa is, so he needs to talk to them because he wants to kill Vanessa. That's the least, to me. The weakest part of this show right now is Axel wanting to kill Vanessa. It made no sense when they pulled it in the season finale, and it makes no sense now.
Just because he knows that, first of all, unless he really didn't listen to her and doesn't know, because I don't think he was actually there when it happened, but I'm sure he figured out what happened. She sacrificed herself. It wasn't like Vanessa's fault, and Vanessa could. Yeah, I remember he knew she couldn't move. So Vanessa didn't do it. He was there, I think, when it happened.
He knew.
So, yeah, the fact that he blames her enough that he's like, I'm going to kill her, that part I did not get last year either. Because it seems kind of, I mean, I understand that he was in love with Scarlett and everything, but still. Yeah, but we'll have to see where that goes.
Yeah.
All right.
So I would just say it was a welcome episode having zero Sam in it. and it's only when we get to the end of this episode of this recap and ready to move on that I think, gee, Vanessa wasn't in it at all, and it was still a really interesting episode. With
neither
Vanessa
nor
Scarlett.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. Now, that you said, I'm like, you're right, Vanessa wasn't in it. So yeah, that proves that it. I think it held up, and you didn't necessarily need that. So, all righty. Yeah, there is a lot of different, sides that kind of flips back and forth too. But this show's done that a lot to begin with. I mean, once I think she was pregnant, wasn't she the 1 year? So that's a little different. But now it's like a couple different storylines for a while. All right, well, let's move on. I guess Emergence is next.
Yes, it would be.
Unless I missed something. All right. Well, I really like this show. I really like this episode. Plus, we get Terry O'Quinn, which, just makes it all better, even better. But, I really like this episode. What did you guys think? We got big reveal, that's for sure.
One of the things I like about the show so far is it's giving us answers somewhat quickly. My favorite part, though, was when Joe goes to meet Terry O'Quinn's character, and she's like, I think this might be something. And he's like, I have a lot of people working on stuff. And he's like, I'll take a look at it for you. And he plays all coy and stuff and everything. And then as soon as she walks outside, he comes and he's like, you stole it. And she's like, I thought you didn't even know if it was yours. That was pretty important because he let his little charade go quickly. So let me ask you guys, so are we to believe that she's like a Terminator, the little girl, Piper?
I don't know.
What are we supposed to think here?
You know what I was thinking, though? That card she had with that disc on, that was the same kind of thing, wasn't it? I'm sorry, I just suddenly thought of that.
No.
Go ahead.
No, it's definitely different.
No, but I mean, it's a disc like that, probably, right? It just might be a different robot.
Yes.
I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
We don't know. I mean, so I would say, AJ, that I agree with you. That was my thought. So at the end, at the episode near its end, it hadn't really occurred to me that she was that it was a technology-based mystery. Like, is she an alien? Is she more like Eleven on Stranger Things, having, you know, some sort of EST powers that they were studying? I don't think she's an android. I think that, much like AJ implies, was it that she's a cyborg, that she, I mean, she definitely,
could be part
that woman, world. That woman who, the woman with the long curly hair, whose name, Emily, said, you know, in 2 to 3 hours, organ failure will set in. She has organs. She is, she's either a cyborg, like the Terminator, which is more robot with like flesh added, or is she more like the type of people like we saw in Orphan Black, who were regular humans who wanted to augment themselves with like technology and things like that?
Or did they like clone organs and made her completely from scratch? It could be, we don't really know. But yeah, I think she was obviously, whoa, my son's gonna die, has a human in her too, or she wouldn't be able to pass all the doctor tests and everything else. I'm gonna go get another phone while I'm talking to you guys.
Well, that's a good. Okay, that's a good point that Jamie makes, AJ, that she's been thoroughly studied in the hospital with x-rays and MRIs, and so I guess she doesn't have a metal skeleton, right? Because that would have showed up in the hospital, right? Like, no one has indicated that she's not fully flesh and blood. But I think it could be about sort of next-generation technology that the show can play a little loose with. But she did have all the lights lit up under her skin when the disc was, you know, uploaded.
She's got something in there that's not human. But my question is they said, oh, I don't even remember where it said it, but somebody said at some point when they were like theorizing that they could have made someone to survive a plane crash. But I don't know. I'm still kind of wondering, did she cause the plane crash? Like, it could have had nothing to do with making her survive. It could have been that they were transporting her somewhere and she found out what was happening and, you know, crashed it and killed them.
Well, here's the thing. Let me ask both of you guys a question. So, on this program, it's just been sort of revealed that maybe she's like a, you know, someone even says, what, she's a robot? I don't believe you. But she has these other qualities, you know, the things that led us to believe she was an alien or had, like, supernatural powers were, like, when that creepy guy comes in the house to steal the disc, every time Piper gets scared, like, electricity goes on and off, things rattle, things fly off the shelves. Like, that's
like
more of an, hang on a second. Yeah.
Sorry.
I was going to say that's more of an ESP-based thing. You're going to say, what do you think? It's more of a... But what were you saying?
Like electromagnetics, because I keep thinking about like when the objects fly off. It kept it before reminding me of the hatch, and now I'm thinking about like when the hatch started like crunching and everything, pieces. I don't know. It just made me think of that, and it's kind of like it could be some kind of electromagnetic interference or something, and that's why like she affects pieces are affected by her, like the car and the radio. And stuff.
So in other words, she's not telekinetic or anything like that. But something in her genetic makeup, because of whatever augmentations have been done to her, when she gets upset, it's having an adverse effect, which is why these things are happening.
Right, it could
like
be.
Things
could
rattling
not be
around.
Too,
it's an interesting idea that it could be an interference because she's, you know, not in the proper surrounding and just kind of, you know, having a free-for-all.
Yeah.
And not even knowing what's going on. That's an interesting thought.
I mean, so it does seem to me that, so I agree with you guys. I mean, we're so happy to see Terry O'Quinn in this role. First of all, because, you know, we love him. We love his work. He's a great actor. He does a lot of shows we like. You know, I also think that casting an actor of his caliber in that role tells me that we're going to see a lot more of that character and that he might not just be an invisible villain, but, you know, I mean, I know he's a lot of shows, but might have time. But I do think, you know, as I think about the show, I think the central tension of the show is going to be about, like, the dangers of technology. And, you know, we saw I assume it was Terry O'Quinn's people who were able to remotely activate the hitman's morphine drip and cause it to overdose him. And it was only because Officer Friendly there was sitting there that they were able to save him. But, I mean, that was something that, you know, basically they hacked. They were able to kind of hack the hospital and get into that machine. Right? And we also see a little girl who's, like, partially, like, built with technology or whatever. And I just feel like where the show is going to, like, I can see maybe, I'm predicting that possibly a theme of the show is going to be sort of like, you know, the specter of technology, the you know, what a bad guy can do with technology.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, is I like that every time something kooky kind of happens, that we see that symbol that, like, I guess, I don't know if it's the company logo or part of the secret government or, the, you know, the secret division, but we always see that, like, computer grid right before shit goes wonky. Like,
oh, yeah.
It was that little chip she took out of her neck was on, it was on it, too, and then when she was looking at the TV, it showed up, and right before they messed with this morphine drip, it showed up on the monitor.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of means something there. What? Hey, how'd you guys like those robot dogs that were guarding the automated building?
Those are cool. That reminded me of Elementary, though, in a couple different ways. But,
I had two thoughts about those. My first initial thought was, oh, my God, it's the bad episode of The X-Files. Sorry, not the bad episode.
Yes,
I like that.
The really, really, really bad episode of The X-Files. That was my first thought. My second thought was, it reminded me of an episode. Yeah, we know you did.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It reminded me of an episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, I haven't watched it. So that actually brings me to another comment. I was disappointed. I thought the CGI was pretty bad in this episode, starting from almost the opening scene where Piper has a nightmare that the door is locked.
Oh my God, that
and
door!
She reaches out and touches the doorknob, and it crumbles in her hands, right? And then the whole door starts falling away. And I mean, was it me or was that like some really bad CGI right there?
It was really bad, but it was supposed to be a dream, so I forgave it, but yeah, it was horrible. I forgot about that piece, but that was really bad.
I also thought, and AJ, are you like making a recipe and cooking or something? I hear a little background noise. If you can just put your mic away from it.
It's not coming from me this. It's not coming from me this time. I'm sitting here doing nothing.
Okay, it's coming from the government is listening to us, or maybe Jamie's baking a cake. I don't know. It's not coming from me either. I also thought, so the dog robots were not terrible, but there was a scene when the chief of police and the reporter, why am I not remembering their names, Allison Pullman's the actress, when they were hiding under the table and the robot dogs are walking on the table on top of them, and I thought the robot dog feet were horrible CGI also. I feel like they skimped in this episode on some of the effects. And
I thought that scene was
kind of funny, though, in a weird way.
Well, I thought it was funny,
just the action of it. I don't know.
It was cool. Alyssa's like high-tech security dog, and they can't figure out that they're under the table.
Yeah, I know. Like,
right?
Those kind of things.
Yeah, I guess their only sensors are visual right in front of them, and that's it. Not sure.
And then that lady comes in the same, and she's like, I told you, you only had whatever it was, 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how did you go from then?
I think I want to ask you guys also, I'm sorry I'm being like the moderator and asking all these questions, but I think the best thing about the show is the acting. really. Like, yeah. I can forgive, like, bad CGI because I think the acting's pretty good.
Yeah.
I agree.
I didn't really notice bad CGI except in this episode. I mean, if I go back and think about it, maybe it wasn't, you know, 100%.
Yeah.
But this was the first time it really, like, took me out of the story.
I agree with you there. I do. It suddenly was egregious, this episode. I'm surprised at how much I like Donald Faison in this. And I like him. I mean, I thought last week that I like him in this because I like him with Alison Tolman, and I found that they were sort of believable at these divorced parents who are, like, doing a great job of co-parenting. But I really like Donald Faison, like, solo in his episodes, in his scenes with Piper. Like, he's not – I thought I just liked him – the depiction of a couple, but I liked him as a dad too. He's surprising me a little bit. Maybe because I'm just not that familiar with his work. What do you guys think?
Well, I've only seen him do comedy, so I really am not either. But yeah, I agree. I think everyone in this is pretty good.
Yeah, I think the whole cast has done really well. And Donald Faison, like I said, I'm used to seeing him in more comedic type roles. So, I mean, not that he's really been overly dramatic in these past couple episodes, but yeah, I just think he's, you know, so far he's a really good character, you know, whether it's in scenes with the kids or with Joe, you know, he's a believable character, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, her name is Joe.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Thank you. Her name is Joe. Yeah. So.
Let me ask, I got a question. I keep going back and forth on the reporter. Like, I feel like I'm waiting for a shoe to drop with him. Like, he's helpful, and he definitely, I don't think he's in league with Terry O'Quinn's character, but I'm waiting for some kind of shoe to drop with him. Like, there's something we don't know about him. I can't believe it's just journalistic curiosity that he's been harping on this guy.
Yeah, I can see that. There's something there, but we don't know what. Speaking of, I don't think I told you guys. I just want to get in before I forget to tell everybody. I'm talking to him Thursday. Wayne,
oh,
the one who plays
reporter.
The reporter, Benny.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Then ask him.
Well,
ask him what his deal is.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you hiding?
I'll have to ask him that.
I agree with you, AJ, that I sort of get that feeling that he's not fully to be trusted. He's not honest. Of course, I get that feeling partly because Joe so clearly reacts to him as though he can't be trusted. and when he sort of revealed this week that he knew more than he'd been telling Joe, I wasn't really surprised. I also get the feeling that he hasn't told the whole truth and there's more to it. And I think that we're going to learn more, and you're only making me think of it now, AJ, like, and Jamie, like, what more is, if it's more than journalistic curiosity, what is it? Was Piper, like, his sister, his niece, or is Piper, like, does he have more interest in Piper specifically? Does he have an axe to grind against Terry O'Quinn for some reason? Like, is it personal? What is it? But I think you're right that it's not just journalistic curiosity. Driving him forward, right? That would be maybe kind of boring. It might actually be reasonable and make sense. Like, not every reporter in the world has some super personal connection, except if they're on TV.
Otherwise you're kind of insulting me, right?
yeah.
Wait a second there.
yeah. I mean, reporters are reporters, and they're driven by, you know, being journalists and journalistic curiosity,
right.
And they're not always like, Jamie, do you secretly have, like, some personal reason for having a phone call with this guy on Friday? No, it's just your job.
Yeah, but he's also willing to go above and beyond. I mean, I know some reporters, like, when they go and they do things like going to war, you know, war zones, you kind of wonder why, but he's kind of risking his life in that. I don't know, but then I guess a lot of them on TV do, so that's really hard to say because it's still not real life.
He's just so cagey. Good point there, AJ. That guy, there's more there to be TBD. So, all right, pretty well covered, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That episode,
more.
Anything else? All right.
I don't think the only other thing I will say is I also have another Prodigal Son interview coming up.
Oh, okay.
So I've got a lot of stuff going on. So, oh, and the other thing I should say, I know, Karen, you know about it, but we might, because I think I got somebody hopefully that can cover it, we might have kind of a big event thing coming up this weekend. So people need to stay tuned to Twitter and to the site. But it looks like I'm at least going to be able to cover Apple TV Plus. So just leave that out there.
Great. Great.
All right.
Cool.
Well, I guess then I'm out. So I will talk to you guys next week. And then soon we'll discuss if we're going to also do Roger's show, and we can tell everybody that too. All right?
Okay. All right, great.
Okay. Night-night, guys.
Good.
Okay.
All right, good night,
okay.
Jenny. Have a good week.
Night. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. AJ?
So, the ever-changing world of 1984, American Horror Story.
Oh, yeah.
Before we can start talking about the episode, I just want to point out something.
Yeah.
It was episode 4. There are...
It was episode 4.
Episode 4.
So it's episode 4, and most of the cast is wiped out already. Like, most of the cast is killed already, right?
We've only lost Ray and the gym counselor, the activities counselor.
Which one is Ray? Matthew Morrison?
Ray was the black guy.
Is Ray?
Ray was the black guy.
And the guy from Glee, the guy from Jane Fonda, who's packaged.
Yeah. That's what I said. Him and Ray. They're the two we've lost. But everybody else is in league with a killer or is a killer, except for Brooke and the what you call it,
the cook.
Well, the cook got killed, I forgot about the cook getting killed. But the Olympic guy, Alan Xavier, who's burnt to a crisp now.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone either is a psycho killer, an accidental killer, or is dead. And it's early in the season. This was a crazy. This episode was complete like crazy town this week. What happened on the show?
I loved it.
Well, so I mean, if we were just gonna like run down these characters in succession, so it turns out that the main killer of the season, Mr. Jingles, is not actually a killer at all.
Well, he is now.
And,
he wasn't before.
who did he kill? Oh, he killed a bunch. Yeah. He had been tricked. I mean, so we knew, we have talked about this, that we knew that there was more to Margaret, and that Margaret, we speculated that Margaret was involved with him, in league with him, in love with him, like we talked about this a couple weeks ago. But it turns out that she's very much like Montana in that she manipulated and used this guy to do her killing for her. And it was only the like psychiatric hospital that turned him into the killer that he's been these last two episodes, right?
Yeah, I mean, they pretty much convinced him, they tortured him, they did so much to the electroshock therapy and everything, and everybody's been telling him for so long what a killer he is, but he started believing he's a ghoul. I guess I did it, all these people think I did, type of thing. It turns out he was sweet on Margaret, and she was being bullied, and since he didn't do anything about it, she did.
She killed all those people and set him up and blamed him for it.
Because he didn't take care of it like he said he would.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, they've set it up over the last couple episodes that Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, is a completely inept killer who can't really kill anyone. He kind of sucks at killing. It's funny. It's a little bit funny that Montana relies on him to to do this for her because he's not really good at it. Like we saw last week, she's like, why is Brooke even still alive anymore? He's kind of inept. But then,
well, he's kind of good at it.
Well, he's not, but all of a sudden we get this whole, like, we get this whole all of a sudden paranormal,
backstory.
What am I
flashback.
Saying? Supernatural thing going on. But we did get the flashback. How'd you like that flashback?
It was hilarious. I was telling her all those men, you know, what was it called? Manrobics or manzercise or something.
Oh yeah, manaerobics.
Like
manaerobics, yeah. That was pretty good.
And that's where she meets him, and she essentially is the one that sets him on his killing spree. She gets him started when he kills the guy that was giving her a hard time, and she's like, "Have you ever killed anyone before?" And he's like, "A couple people, you know." Like you said, now we have some kind of, you know, after he gets killed by Jingles, now we have, I'm guessing it's got to be, you know, since he's a satanic believer, that it's got to be Satan has, you know, given him his life back, because when Jingles killed him, I'm like, he can't be dead, because Richard Ramirez wasn't captured until August of 85.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he can't be dead.
I feel like, you know, this could be a little bit of a turning point. I mean, not a little bit. It's clearly a turning point of the story, right? But I have kind of felt for the last couple of weeks that this season of American Horror Story was not really as serious. It has been not at all. It's been basically a comedy in some sense. Like, every single scene and every single person is a trope. And the fact that, as you said, every single person is either a killer or in league with a killer, except for, like, the heroine, is sort of this very, it's a very funny take off on 80s movies. It only seeing Richard seeing him elevated by Satan or whatever and come back to life, and the way Rita was watching and, like, holy shit, what's going on here? Was the first, it wasn't really that scary, but it was the first indication that this could maybe get scary. Well, to me, Satan is always scarier. Like, you know me, like, this kind of horror is much scarier to me than, like, a killer horror. Like, this stuff scares me. So it feels like maybe a bit of a turning point. I don't know. Have you found it less serious, less?
Oh, yeah. Since the jump, it's definitely, I mean, like we've said a couple times, I mean, they're at camp. And this season is campy, you know? It's totally a play on words. The tagline was something like that. So it's, you know, and that's the great thing about American Horror Story, you know, being an anthology and everything, is you can kind of have fun with stuff like this. Like, you can still, you know, we're in the vein of a horror story, you know, because of the slasher flicks. But at the same time, you can have fun with it, you know? And I think Ryan Murphy has really found a way to blend the two together, especially since, you know, a lot of 80s stuff is joked upon now, especially in this era. You know, 80s is kind of looked at as, oh my God, the hair, oh my God, the clothes. So, you know, it's going to have its funny, comical stuff that people of our generation are going to really enjoy. So it reminds me, I love the fight between Montana and what's her face there? The nurse.
Rita.
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 Yeah. That was pretty great. And you know what I liked? I like the fact that Brooke is hanging in that net. She's swinging all around. Everything's happening around her. You know, they're fighting over who's going to get to kill her. And then she's like, screw this place. And she frees herself.
Yeah, and let's not forget that she fought off the Night Stalker in the first episode. Like, she's more capable than people, like, give her credit for.
Yeah.
And
that's the other thing we learned.
We
learned that Montana is, what we learned this week, why Montana wants her dead, because apparently the guy that Brooke's fiance shot in the head with her brother. And, of course, Montana totally believes that Brooks would think that liar, which, you know, from what we've gathered so far, she's not. So I think it's interesting when people want to get revenge because of what they believe. Sorry, go ahead.
My only problem with that is, wouldn't Brooke know her fiancé's sister? Like, she doesn't know Montana, doesn't recognize her.
No. It wasn't her fiancé's. It was her fiancé's best man.
Oh, so she was the best man. She was in love with the best man.
No.
Montana was in love with the best man.
Okay. No. The best man was Montana's brother. Not the groom. The best man was Montana's brother.
Okay. The best man was Montana's brother. So it's conceivable that maybe Brooke would not know him.
Right.
Okay.
So.
It's a little, to me, a little bit, I would think that Brooke might have at least. Okay. So she's not invited to the wedding. Yeah. Okay. All right. I get it. I can accept that. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that for me.
I like the way that it kind of feels like 6 degrees of separation. Because everybody's connected in some way. It's turning out. You know?
Yeah.
Through everything.
Yeah.
This is one of those we're not here by accident type of things.
Well, and it does happen in these 80s movies where there's always some sort of twist and some sort of connection I thought it was a great episode, a little bit crazy and shot like, but you know, this is an episode where by the end of it, I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, what is going to happen? And, but this is that moment, as you have said several times, as we talk about this, that American Horror Story is never about what you think it's going to be about.
Right.
And this is that moment in this season where suddenly it's going to be about something suddenly it might be about Satan, right? Although they did a pretty heavy Satan thing over the last couple seasons. So I don't know if that's it's going either, right?
Well, all I can say is with everything that's happened, it's episode 4. We've already had a million twists and turns, and we still have 6 episodes left. So it's like,
where is
this going to end up? Where is it going to end up? Like, I can't wait to see what's next. So, the big thing about this season, I think, is to say it's been a lot of fun so far.
It's probably the most fun season yet. Like, I don't know if I've ever.
Yeah.
I mean. Yeah, it's always kind of fun, right? But that's not really a term you use to talk about this show.
No, not at all. This season is definitely fun.
Yeah. It's been great. So.
All right. On to Mr.
Next
Robot,
up.
Then.
Oh, my God.
Before we start talking
Robot.
About the episode, there's something I wanted to mention last week when we were talking about Angela. And the whole time travel thing, theories and everything, whatnot. Something I want to mention, because I don't remember if we talked about it initially when it took place, but doing the rewatch, I was like, oh my God, I forgot about that. The little girl that interviews Angela before Angela talks to White Rose.
The little girl
that they use as young Angela. Like, you know, I'm talking about the little girl in that room. Yep, the little blonde girl in the room with Angela. You know what I'm talking about? Which is
I don't remember that.
Questions.
I don't remember that.
She's sitting in front of an old time like a Commodore computer, and she's asking her questions. And she's like, "There's a key. Where's the key?" And she's asking, "Have you ever cried during sex?" And all these like really obscure questions. And then White Rose calls. And that's when the whole thing with Angela becoming a believer starts. But anyway, that little girl in that scene is the same actress who plays young Angela. There's got to be a reason for that.
There's always a reason for that. Yeah. Well, there's that too.
But anyway, let's talk about this week's episode. You go first because I'm actually a little nervous.
I am too. So I was nervous from the beginning of the episode when the episode starts and I hear Philip Price's voice as a voiceover to what was really an incredible visual montage, which is, you know, but Philip Price is recounting the rise of White Rose and we learn about the Deus group. And I was like, wait a minute. As I watched it, I thought, what is up with all this exposition? That is not what they do on the show. Why am I getting this like voiceover exposition thing? And I really was concerned about it. And then, you know, then you see when the scene turns that Philip Price is actually recounting, he's finally revealing everything to Elliot, right?
Elliot.
And so I'm like, okay, I get it, but I really wasn't entirely comfortable with this major information dump of all this info that we never got for three seasons, and now suddenly it's all just being offered up. I didn't really love that at first. I'm like, okay. Then as the scene plays out, you're like, okay, Philip Price is filling his guts. I kind of get it. I'm really nervous about the end. In between, there's so much to love that I do want to talk about because there were some amazing things happening in this episode. But the huge reveal at the end of the episode was incredible, and it makes me nervous. The idea that another personality has surfaced that neither Elliot nor Mr. Robot knows about really worries me, being dropped sort of like a bomb into the story, right? Like, I feel like, what? Like, why this at the last minute? I don't feel like I would have to go back now and watch three seasons to know if the indications were there. I didn't see them, but I just watched all of last season. Like, I just rewatched the whole thing like 2 weeks ago, and I don't really feel that I saw indications of another personality of lost time that neither can account for, right? It worries me. And then it appears at the end to be baby Elliot. Like, not baby, but child Elliot is the new personality, right?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't know. I think because you see the child Elliot sitting in the chair and he's spinning around and his mother comes out, wherever the heck they were. And
she says, you know where they were?
They're waiting.
They were in the same room from the pilot episode where Elliot first meets Tyrell. It's at E Corp. That room is at E Corp.
Well, no, he first meets Tyrell at Allstate, but later on when Elliot when Tyrell, see, I felt that way too. That's kind of what I was thinking that they were at E Corp. But here's, so she says to him, she says, we're waiting, and Elliot says, are we waiting for Elliot? And she says, no. And he says, Mr. Robot. And she says, no. And he's like, oh, the other one.
Yeah.
Now, if that's Elliot, why would he refer to Elliot in the third person? If he is Elliot, why would he refer to Elliot in the third person? So it almost sounds like there's more than that kind of made me feel like there was more than three, but I don't like this. I don't like it. We are in the final season. The show isn't about his multiple personality. It is, but not in this kind of way. And to have a third one show up in the final act with no indication before there's anything. I mean, we got Vera to deal with because, you know, that Darlene brought him up. Got Vera to deal with. We've got Mr. Robot and Elliot finally working together, and they're both in the dark here. We've got this whole White Rose thing. We've got, you know, they're trying to convince Price to help them. I mean, there's so much going on. It's the last season, plus the overarching, what is White Rose up to? And now you throw another personality at us that we don't, I get it. Season one was, hey, Mr. Robot's imaginary, and he's dead. Season two, hey, he's in prison, you know? And then I felt like we kind of got away from that because we don't need to have that type of, you know, it's not that type of show anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun and it works. But now I just, it makes me nervous. It really, I did not like it. I mean, and I, you know, and they haven't steered us wrong yet. So I'm obviously, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to just keep going with it and see where it goes. But that, I just, I hope
it
plays out well.
It makes me nervous, I think, for the same reasons that it makes you nervous, that there's a lot to cover in not that many episodes remaining, and this is a huge curveball. It makes me, I mean, I guess, it makes me nervous in that there's not time to really develop that personality, whoever it is, and deal with it. And it, yeah, I have sort of enjoyed the way this season, Elliot no longer gives us the voiceover. It's always Mr. Robot giving us the voiceover.
Which,
and
oh,
Elliot
amazing.
Right? And I love that. And Elliot is way too obsessed now with White Rose to bother talking to us, who he's always treated as like a friend, right? And now Mr. Robot, I'm not entirely down with this kinder, gentler Mr. Robot of the last couple of weeks, who's like, oh, Elliot, you know, I'm worried about you. Your mother died. Don't you want to, like, cry? Or he didn't actually say that, but I did found Mr. Robot to be a little bit overly surprisingly gentle. Sympathetic, yeah. Introducing another, again, I feel like I haven't seen indications that there's a, that they're, like, this is the first bit of lost time they can't account for. And it's like this personality, like there haven't been indications of another personality, and then it appears
right
out of nowhere, and it's a little boy. Can that kid hack the way? I mean, all the personalities retain Elliot's skills, I guess, because Mr. Robot could never be a super hacker. He died in like 1986 before like he wouldn't know any computer languages. He has Elliot's knowledge and skills, right? Because he is Elliot.
Right.
So I'm willing to accept that there is a personality that's young Elliot, but if they wanted to add another personality, I don't know why they're adding the child and the mother. Could the mother be I guess the death of the mother could trigger the emergence of another personality that we hadn't seen before, right?
Yeah, but she just died. And
yes,
Darlene told him about Vera months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
speaking, I have another little gripe about this episode, but we'll lead into that
yeah.
as we talk about the other stuff. How great were those scenes with Elliot and Darlene, though?
I rewatched parts of this episode, and I thought the scenes in the chapel were amazing. Where Elliot is shot with that cross behind him for most of it, he's shot with that cross behind him with the light shining down on the cross against the green wall. I thought it was incredible. I thought it was amazing.
And when he yelled Jesus Christ and then turned around and faced the and saw the
cross. Yeah, he yelled Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. Yeah, that was amazing. It was a surprising episode. I'm kind of surprised that they took an entire episode of the last season to this very emotional, character-y thing with their mother dying, who has not really been a factor. Like, we know that they're estranged from their mother and she was a jerk to them and like, kind of abusive or whatever. But she's been, like, a non-factor. Like, they're not – Elliot's motivated – by his father, the other personality is his father, right? They never mentioned their mother. I was kind of surprised that it came up and that they spent this much time on it. And yet it doesn't bother
me. They have touched on how, you know, that their mother was abusive throughout their childhood and everything. But I think it's going to, you know, it's turning out that there's more to the whole story with the mother than we realized because, you know, after Mr. Robot died, she was still around. She was their, you know, only caregiver. So,
yeah.
I mean, and it appears that she knows about Elliot and his multiple personalities, and it feels like she used that to her advantage in some way. We'll learn more about it each week, obviously. But the thing that gets me is the safe deposit box. I was like, ooh, what? I wonder what's in there, you know? And I thought it was a great twist because, like Elliot says to Darlene, you haven't stepped foot in this place in 3 years. And now all of a sudden you care about all this stuff? You know, it was an interesting role reversal because Elliot did go to see her that one time. You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, for Darlene to kind of be like, ooh, let's see what's in this charity box, which I was kind of anxious to see what was in there. And then they get to the bank, and this is where I have my problem. Oh, well, we couldn't contact anybody for the past 2 years, so we threw away the contents. And I immediately was like, that's bullshit right there. Like, no bank I have ever been to, if you lapse in payment, they don't throw your shit away. They lock it, so
but the guy says that.
You pay for it.
But I think the guy says that nobody was paying, that she stopped paying. And
the bank guy says
payments didn't come.
No. They threw her shit out. Because Darlene even says, she's like, you throw her fucking shit out? disposed of the property in the box, which is total bullshit. So one of two things. Now I'm even more anxious to know what was in that box. Because there's a reason here that Sam Esmail has done his research and knows that banks do not throw shit away. They make it so you can't access it until you paid for what the time you owe. They don't just throw people's shit away.
Well, that's not entirely true. I think that after they're allowed to, like when you see those lists in the newspaper of unclaimed property and unclaimed, you know, accounts and stuff, and I think they might be allowed to auction or to get rid of it. I think I don't know if they have to sit on a mountain of stuff forever. But at any rate, that's neither here nor there. I agree with you that was put in there for a reason. I mean, the main thing is that's not a throwaway scene, right? Like, I wonder.
No, I don't think so.
Could that box have contained papers that could incriminate White Rose in the Washington case, in the Washington Township case? Or, like, is it really thrown away? Did White Rose go after it? Did the mother actually hide it someplace else? Like, that. But that's like Chekhov's gun, right?
Yeah, I think that's what this guy, you know, he's low on the totem pole. He went and was like, oh, where's this box? And they're like, oh, we got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that box is going to show up. That box, or at the very least, the contents of the box are going to show up at some point. They were told to tell them it was thrown away, but somebody has it somewhere. How it comes back around, I don't know. But that can't be a throwaway scene. Because it feels very important to me.
It does.
Especially once we learn at the end of the episode that his mom, you know, that ending we get, that made me even more curious. At first I was letting it go. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't feel right. And then we see his mom with the whole multiple personality thing, and I went, I want to see that box even more now.
Well, we know that Elliot's perception of his father was wrong. Like, the whole, Elliot was pushed off the window, Elliot jumped out the window. And what Elliot thought his father was, like, abusive and horrible, and therefore developed a second personality of his father, and later come to find out that Elliot's memories of what went on with his dad are not really correct. So is it possible that Elliot's memories and Elliot's and Darlene's memories of their mother are not really entirely correct?
Well, I trust Darlene's memories.
I don't know. But we also got this business where the lady in the nursing home was like, oh, your mother was so nice. She was this woman went on and on about how nice their mother was. And, wait.
Go ahead.
Then we saw that she kept the Mother's Day tape, which Elliot and Darlene and Angela had made for Angela's mother. And, you know, Darlene makes this comment, like, maybe she wished it was for her. They definitely did a lot of character development on the mother without her even being there to make her I wonder if there's more on that tape that we didn't hear and that Darlene didn't hear. If it was taped over something, or someone taped something onto it, or, like, I don't know if it was just, I do think a lot of that, the mother's death, was allowing Darlene to process Angela's death. And that's mostly what this episode was about. But I just wonder if there's more there. Like, I just, like, Darlene's memories, do we trust them? I mean, she's been on drugs for most of her adult life. She's kind of a bitch. And you know, even people like you and I who are arguably stable individuals could remember things differently than our parents remember them, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I agree with you on the safe deposit box, and I wonder if there's more on the cassette tape that we didn't see.
That's an interesting thought. I think part of it could be, it could, you know, I mean, we might never know. We might find out more. It could be regret, you know, maybe kind of, you know, she keeps it as a memento that, you know, she wasn't the mother she should have been type of thing as she got on later in life and started to get ill and everything, started to realize, you know, my children hate me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I've been thinking about in the last couple weeks, you know, more than the last couple weeks, the last couple seasons on the show, is about how, you know, we talked about how it's about mental illness, but it, what this show is really about, I love the way Elliot and White Rose are so similar. As much as Elliot, like, hates White Rose and wants to take her down, you know, there's the, like, White Rose also has two personalities in a way. Like, White Rose has the face she shows to the world, which is Ambassador Zhang or Director Zhang, whatever his name is. And then there's the White Rose face that she shows to certain people. And some people know that she is both. And some people know that she's both. But I don't know if Price has ever seen the White Rose person, right? Like, when BD Wong...
I don't know. We haven't seen him see it. Let's put it that way.
No, and it makes me wonder, like, do people really see it? You know how Mr. Robot is really Elliot? Like,
right.
And people, like, we see Mr. Robot talking, but other people just see Elliot talking. Like,
right.
When we see White Rose, is she always White Rose, or is she? I mean, I think she is, because when Elliot met White Rose, it was White Rose. It wasn't Director Zhang, right? I I've been loving so much this idea about, like, the faces you present to people and the part you keep inside of you, and how White Rose and Mr. Robot are kind of the same person. Like, White Rose is to Zhang what Mr. Robot is to Elliot in a sense. Not really. I mean, White Rose is more like...
Well,
I mean,
a little bit. I mean, I get what you're saying, and I agree. But I feel like White Rose is who Zhang really is. You know, Zhang, you know, you gotta remember, you know, he's Chinese. Let's just kindly say that the Chinese aren't as accepting of things like that as other countries are. So he has to put on a face as Zhang, because if he tried to walk into a government building as White Rose, they'd be like, hey, you're not our minister. Get the hell out of here, weirdo.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Chinese are not exactly really known for being understanding.
Tolerant. Yeah.
But no, I completely agree. So I think White Rose is who he really is. And he has to put on the face of Zhang, because otherwise he would never get anywhere in his quest for world domination. One thing I really loved in this episode, I'm loving Mr. Robot talking to us, because Elliot had gone so far. And I see what you mean about him being more sympathetic, but I think part of it is due to the fact that for the first time in a long time, Mr. Robot and Elliot are on the same page. So Mr. Robot doesn't have to be as angst-ridden towards Elliot. He doesn't have to convince him of anything, really, because, I mean, Elliot's kind of going a step above and beyond where they even were because he's so determined to take White Rose down. And even Mr. Robot's like, whoa, we got to be smart about this, you know? We need to be more careful about this. And Elliot's just kind of like full steam ahead. But
yeah.
I love that Mr. Robot's talking to us now because it's kind of like, hey, I know you're there, so I'll tell you what's going on. This is what I'm thinking. Oh, and fuck you.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. I was like, oh, sorry. But something you just made me think of when you talk about the mental illness, I'll never forget. I was actually telling Artie this when we started watching Mr. Robot. I remember season one, first couple episodes, and you were like, you know, I don't know how much I'm going to like this show. It's a show about a bunch of hackers. And I said to you, I was like, is it a show about hackers or is it about somebody with a mental illness who just happens to be a hacker? And you're like, oh, I don't know. I guess we'll see. And
yep.
Look where we are now.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there are so many levels right now to Elliot and Mr. Robot and White Rose. And I mean, everyone on the show has there was a sense which Angela had two faces. One she showed to Elliot, one she showed to Mr. Robot. You know, everyone has been sort of, Darlene has maybe been the most kind of straightforward person, but come to find out. So I did disagree a little bit with this idea that, like, you know, I read a couple like comments online about how Darlene murdered, what's her name? The woman, Susan Jacobs.
Yeah.
Susan Jacobs, you know, Darlene killed her sort of by accident. Like, Darlene hit her with a stun gun
no,
and she fell into the pool.
But
you think Darlene stunned her.
Well, but Darlene knew she had a heart condition. She played it off when they questioned her about it. But she knew.
She knew she had a heart condition, yeah. So she really killed her because of all the bad things she's done in her life. And Susan Jacobs was a horrible person who needed to be killed.
Darlene has one image of Susan Jacobs at the trial when they were, you know, going after E-Corp and everything for the Washington Township. She remembered seeing Susan Jacobs laughing when they lost the case.
Right, that's right.
And
she was
laughing. And that was like, and she was like an 8-year-old little girl watching this woman laugh at these families who just lost everything.
That's right. Good memory, yeah. Good memory.
I think they'll rewatch too, so.
yeah, you watched the whole thing. I just watched the one season.
Yeah. That's why you probably don't remember that scene with Angela, I think. Because you just watched that was season two with Angela.
Yeah, I just watched the last season. I only watched the last season. I think that, you know, this business with Darlene, I mean, it's interesting how something that, like, I had kind of forgotten about Susan Jacobs, and it was a nice, like, oh, yeah, moment when it comes back to haunt Elliot in this episode,
mm-hmm.
right?
That
this thing that Darlene did that he doesn't even know she did is such a huge thing.
And I'm really glad they're not dilly-dallying. Like, even, you know, this is the second episode. Even last week I was like, Darlene needs to get her head out of her ass because she needs to get back with Elliot and get things rolling here, you know. And here they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're back together already. In the second episode, so I like that they're not screwing around and they're just going for it.
Yeah. Talk about things that need to be resolved. We had a really, the saddest, most harrowing part of this episode was poor Dom. Poor Dom DePiero, who in the FBI, who has just been like really cornered by White Rose, by the Dark Army, and her life is ruined. And, the way she yelled at Darlene at the end of last season, like, Dom knew what she was getting into. Like, Dom says to Darlene, like, you've taken everything from me. Stay away from me. And, you know, when she is forced to give false testimony to her boss, and then they go ahead and kill her boss anyway, it was just, she's just so, Dom is just so she's like a zombie going through the motions. She's so defeated, and she can't get out, or they'll kill her mother, right? It's so, I feel the most sorry for her. It was the saddest part of it. To me, that was, like, way sadder than Darlene and Elliot, like, dealing with their mother. I feel really sorry for her. In a way, I kind of didn't when we first met her.
Yeah, Dom, I mean, that creepy, I guess her handler, I guess you'd call her, she's creepy. She's a taxidermist. And that lady, I want to keep my mom with me forever and slap the damn dog on the counter. But, you know, she sends her that text of 99% isn't good enough. We need to strive to be 100. Like, they kill this guy investigating because she wasn't 100% believable, or she didn't think she was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, holy crap. You know? Like, I hate seeing Dom like this, because she was good at her job. You know? I mean, she's the one that figured everything out, and she seems so broken now, and it hurts to watch Dom be broken. You know, like, it really, and that, you know, it speaks to two things. It speaks to the writing, and it speaks to her acting. Dom just looks so broken, and I hate seeing it. I'm, like, looking at her going, oh, my God, you know, in such a short, you know, one event in her life, and she is just a completely different person. She's a wreck now.
Yeah, she is. It's really sad to see. It's really, I mean, as you said, she's really broken. And that woman, whose name I forget, who works for White Rose, is very frightening. And I think she's even scarier than Bobby Cannavale's character last season, who was a very cold...
I miss him. I know he's not coming back, most likely, but I missed his character. Was so much fun.
I mean, he was great, and I really liked him. This one, I don't know her name. She's way scarier, and she's like, did you hear the radio broadcast she was listening to while she was in her taxidermy shop? Which was all this crazy stuff about how, like, you know, what Charles Manson did wasn't bad compared to what our own government does. And, like, it was just sort of a really, like, she's a nutcase. She's scary.
She's a true believer.
Well, yeah. I mean, so, which makes me think about a couple of other things. Any idea what the machine might be? It's shocking to me that it's a little, so I keep going back to this idea that whatever's going on the show, that, like, the idea that the UN would allow China to fully annex the Democratic Republic of the Congo is crazy, and yet, you know, I spend some time in Africa on business, and the Chinese are there, and they're building a lot of infrastructure, and, like, every capital city I go to has a brand new highway that the locals call the Chinese Road, and they are, you know, so, I mean, but I guess the other thing is, the other part of that that's crazy is that whatever this machine is that White Rose had it built, it's enormous, it was built in its entirety underneath the Washington Township power plant, and now will be shipped to Congo fully intact, or in parts
it's got to be shipped in pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be shipped in pieces. It's a friggin' accelerator. There's no way you're shipping that thing in one piece.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like an accelerator, but after the Philip Price intro to this episode about, like, Americans' privacy and how we sold it and gave it away and the powerful thing over the world, I'm like, oh, is it just some sort of giant, like, privacy-sucking device? I mean, not really, but is it more about power and control and money?
Well,
it does.
The thing to me is everything White Rose has done – I mean, and we kind of get this from Philip. Everything White Rose has done has been leading up to this moment. Whatever his dream since he was younger was, it is now at its apex. You know, this is the moment. This is everything he's been working for the past 30 years or whatever it's been, you know? Everything has been mounting up to this moment. Every decision he's made, every manipulation, everything he's planned is coming to fruition now, you know? As far as what the machine exactly is or does, I mean, based on what the show's given us, we're supposed to believe it's either a time machine or some kind of portal machine to go between realities. You know, I mean, given what we know, White Rose is obsessed with time. You know, has, I don't know, the whole thing with Angela, thinking that the people were going to be alive again, and it's just going to see her mother, you know, was that White Rose just manipulating her time, what she needed to hear to control her, or is there some kind of truth to it? You know, this whole thing I was just mentioned before with, you know, this little girl that Angela meets, who is the same actress they use as young Angela. There's got to be something to that. You know, I mean, everything is – nothing in this show has ever been what we initially thought it was going to be, and it's worked. So, you know, we have to suspend our disbelief a little bit to a point. I remember when they first – the whole thing with annexing the Congo first came to be, and I don't remember if you did anything, but I remember I was Googling the Congo trying to find out what it could possibly – what the connection could possibly be, because what is the point? What is so important about China getting the Congo? And the only thing I can find is the Congo is very rich in materials that are used in computer components.
Yes.
That's the only thing I can really – there was nothing that jumped out at me and said, oh, this has got to be the reason. But going by the simplest thing, it ties in, you know? I mean, whatever these, you know, they're so rich in these components that maybe that's what they need to finish the machine, you know? And they can't do it if they're not stationed there. They need to be there to put it directly into the machine. They can't, like, you know, whatever the case is. So honestly, it makes sense, you know, because we have to suspend our disbelief to an extent, but at the same time, the show hasn't, I don't want to say jumped the shark yet. It hasn't gone outside the realm of reality yet.
Right.
So at the moment, I'm still trying to stay in the confines of reality.
I do think that, yeah, because White Rose, I think, should be able to ship a machine into a country to become operational without having to, like, annex it. Like a big deal was made about how these are the powers that control the world, and the Deus Group includes a lot of powerful people from a lot of different countries. So, and really, why can't this thing be built and tested in China? Which has tons, it's enormous, with tons of inaccessible areas. And, like, why was it necessary to annex Congo, right? Annex the Congo to do it. It's a weird, so it's rich in minerals that are needed for computers, that's true. But you're right, it's just not enough of a reason to go to this great length. And by the way, we should talk about, I thought the scene with Philip and White Rose at the Christmas tree was another scene that was incredibly shot. Like, Sam Esmail, his eye for visual is just amazing, right? I thought it was a great scene. I thought it was spectacular. And then it ends with White Rose, like, throwing the tree down in frustration, which I thought also was I thought it was going to be the best thing I'd seen all night until I saw the cross.
And that's the first time we've seen White Rose lose her cool, you know? I mean, it's the first time that she's not been in control of the situation or manipulating the situation to what she wants to do. Like, her and Philip have gone at it before, but Philip has always backed down. This is the first time Philip's been like, no, screw you, do what you gotta do. And White Rose loses her shit and dumps the tree. White Rose has never lost the cool like that before, you know, in any circumstance. So, even things don't go 100% the way she wants them to.
Yeah, she's really mad.
So definitely a turning point. Something minor that I wanted to mention. I've loved each season. I love looking at the title of the episode because the first three seasons have always been at some kind of computer code. This season, I've noticed that they're all the most popular one, I'm sure you're aware of, is 404 not. Like, if you go on the computer, you type something in, and the website comes up with 404 not found.
Right.
They're actually using each episode the computer status codes and finding a way for it to work into the episode. You know, like 401 is unauthorized, 402 is payment required, which they worked into the episode with the whole thing with the bank.
Right.
So I thought that's kind of cool. So each episode, looks like the season is going to be whatever the computer code for, 403, 405, 405, so on and so forth. So that's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I like little things like that. I don't know if you know this, but Sam Esmail, he has a computer a computer engineer expert on his staff that adds in all these little things. Like, with the first couple seasons, and they're probably doing it this season, so I never really got that far into it because I refused to fall down the lost rabbit hole ever again.
Right.
But I know you've known about, like, there's certain webs, everything they ever typed into a computer, and the hackers, they type something in, you could actually type that into your computer, it would bring you to a website, and it would either replay the scene, or it would be like a little puzzle to solve or something,
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole course of the show. And he's had, this guy's been on staff with him the entire time to add these little things in to the internet to coincide with the show as a little fun Easter egg extra type of thing. Like QR codes,
yeah.
You scan them, they take you somewhere or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having somebody like that on a show like this on your team is really adds to the reality and intricacy of the show that they're putting together. So.
Oh, yeah.
Little fun stuff.
Hmm.
Actually, it's funny. When I watched Mr. Robot yesterday with Artie, he's like, when everything's all over, he's like, I want to go back through each episode and go on all the websites and see if they're still there.
Oh, he is your son, isn't he?
Yeah. I was like, go for it. And you can tell me anything interesting. I was like, because after Lost, I can't go down there again.
Nope.
But nothing with what Mr. Robot's become. I kind of wish I had with Mr. Robot because it wasn't as intricate as Lost was with it. But I think it would have been kind of fun.
One of the things I love about Mr. Robot is every time they go on the subway, there's like a hilarious movie poster in the background. Have you been noticing them?
Yeah, I've
noticed. Which, is not something that you have to really, like, there are little Easter eggs that you can appreciate without having to, like, look them up or whatever, but they're kind of, like, hilarious.
There's been lots of fun Easter eggs, especially the first two seasons. There was a handful of Night at the Museum references once in a while, and Pump Up the Volume, like, Christian Slater-based type of Easter eggs sprinkled throughout a couple episodes here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
So that's always been fun.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So I guess we're pretty near the end of this tonight, huh?
Yeah. It's funny. With Mr. Robot, it could be a quick episode. It could be like not a lot happened, but there's so much little stuff with Mr. Robot. And talking to you, I think of more things, and I know you talking to me, you think, we play off of each other and think of things we had sort of before, and the next thing we talk about Mr. Robot for half an hour. So
I know. We could do a whole podcast on Mr. Robot, and in retrospect,
we probably shouldn't have done that.
We
probably could. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, all right.
We'll do it again next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Same shows next week. I don't think anything's adding anytime soon. But
all right. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot,
you know,
everyone.
Funny,
thanks.
A lot of the stuff we talk about actually won't be back until 2020. Some of the newer stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
So all right.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Okay.
All we'll
right.
Do it again next week.
Yep. Okay.
And,
good night.
Good night, folks.